The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Monday, Gary, how are you?
I'm doing really good. How are you?
I'm doing well.
How's everybody doing? Interesting weekend, huh?
Yeah, we're friends with North Korea, but not Canada now. So apparently a turn of the tide.
Huh? You know, coming up, we'll talk about the real drama, the fake news, the fake memes, the fake eyebrows, a whole bunch of other stuff. All coming up. I just love that picture of Justin Trudeau. But before we get there, I have a question because I did see that the president has suggested ending the blanket ban on pot. Now, we need to start the show off by saying I was wrong on Friday. Because remember, was it Friday we got into the discussion? And I said, with Jeff Sessions and his anti-pot, this administration is, you're not going to see it. I woke up and the first news I got, we'll talk about in a moment, was actually from you. But after that is when I saw the story that the president suggests ending the blanket ban on pot. And I went, okay, I was wrong there. That's why I don't like to predict anything.
Right.
Because the day I decide to predict something, because Jeff Sessions and the Justice Department they've been outright since the very beginning. No, we're going to enforce pot laws. Mm-hmm. So for the president to say that was like, wow. But I thought to myself, does this mean, would there be a tariff on the Mexican stuff coming in?
Yes.
Now, Maui Waui would still be okay, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
We still own Hawaii, as far as I know. They're still part of our group.
All right.
Yeah.
Now, Thai stick?
Mm-hmm.
Thai stick. I haven't heard that word.
That come
since,
from?
I haven't heard that word since the 70s.
Right.
I'm thinking of anything that had to
the... Get Sean Penn on the phone. He's up with all this.
Propulsion shot.
What?
So, I have to wonder where it all goes.
We need to protect the home growers.
Exactly. Our American farmers.
American farmers, yes.
Right. See, this is why Willie has been for the farmers all along. Willie knows.
He's
going to die. He's going to die a multi-billionaire now.
Oh, wow. That's what Farm Aid was about?
Yes. Well, you know, support the farmers now, and guess what? One day, he's going to become a farmer.
I heard he's been sick.
Yeah, he has been. He's, you know, he's 85 now. And he has been sick. Still does shows. The guy still tours pretty hard. And works pretty hard at 85, but yeah.
I heard, was it last week or the week before, was it that he, you know, left the stage or something?
Yeah.
Hope he's okay.
Yeah, and our thoughts and prayers. A longtime friend of our program. Even though politically we may not be on the same page every day, but I'm always on Willie's page in terms of music and great things he's done over the years.
Mm-hmm. So there it was Friday morning before I saw the pot news. Mm-hmm. But your text is what?
Yeah. Yeah. It was a sad day Friday.
I got your text and I had slept later that day.
Yeah.
And I think you thought you were texting me and I'd been up for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, first on, you told me about Anthony Bourdain, and then the next thing was on Charles Krauthammer, and you said sad, and I had to look it up because I didn't know.
Yeah.
When you said sad, I didn't know what the situation was I had assumed at that point both died.
Well, and it was so... You know, it's so sad to, you know, see something like with an Anthony Bourdain. Again, you know, politically, I'm sure we weren't on the same page. But, you know, he had a tremendous style to his presentation and the things he did on television. And that can't be denied. I'll never forget the one episode on his old show that he did with Ted Nugent. He actually got Ted Nugent to drink a beer during their meal together. And it was great. Because Ted took him out and, you know, shooting guns and the whole thing. And they talked and they had a great conversation. It was a great show. And that was kind of the openness, you know. He was a populist and everything else, but the presentation of his show was, mm-hmm. I think it was really well done. I liked his old show on Travel Channel. I didn't get to watch his CNN show much, but, I always enjoyed the idea of traveling around, going to places. And he made the point that if you look at every culture's food, it really is about what the working class eats. And that's the case with every culture on the planet. That if you look at the best food from any culture, it comes from that working class. Mm-hmm. It's always great food, but it speaks loudly for a culture, whatever culture it might be. And I don't know that I'd ever thought of that before he made that point. He made that point years ago, you know, as a chef. They, you know, I guess you pretty much study that. That's what you do. But then traveling around the world to check out people's cultures and their cuisine is always fascinating to me.
And I've talked about this on the air before. I don't know because I haven't lived there in such a long time. But when I lived in Rockford, Illinois, they had the Ethnic Festival every year. Mm. And they just had tents.
Right,
different ethnic foods and people in traditional garb cooking it. And it was just like, oh.
Yeah.
I need to move away from hamburgers and hot dogs here because, I mean,
well,
it was so fantastic.
We think about buffalo wings, right? From your hometown. And you think about the part of their chicken that
they were throwing it out.
They would throw that out.
Yeah.
You think about.
And it was the folks at the Anchor Bar, the owners, that said maybe we can do something with it and just threw some hot sauce on.
From a Tex-Mex approach, there was, you know, the stories go back, they vary, but, you know, nachos. And apparently there was a cook named Ignacio. This crew comes into the restaurant and says, you know, whatever you got left in the kitchen. And he just kind of threw this, you know, big plate of nachos together. And, I mean, you think about the greatest foods from any given culture, they really are about, you know, the working class food, the working class culture.
After he died, I did see a couple of people I know in the media from Buffalo post where he talked about beef on Kimmelwick, which originates in, except for, I know they make it in Buffalo, and I know they make it now at Buffalo Brothers in Fort Worth, Texas, which is owned by a guy from Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
That grew up like a mile from me, but it's simply, you know, roast beef cooked extremely slow.
Right. So yeah.
On a Kimmelwick roll, which is simply a special hard roll with sesame seed and salt on the top.
Right.
Glued to the top.
Right. Yeah.
however they do it, but on the and it's just absolutely delicious. And he said it's so simple and it's so delicious.
Right.
And so and he talked about that. I was watching a video. He said, you know, it's the working class food, which is actually the greatest food out there in all cultures.
Yeah.
Which was just great. So it was just so sad. And we'll get to that here in just a little bit. Suicide and depression, celebrity suicides. And that's simply because of everything that was said over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just on social media, it's like everybody became a doctor. And when you actually look into depression, when you actually look at the experts out there, they have ideas of what might cause it. But they're not really still sure.
Well, but they can't. It's hard to tell when someone might be going through something like that, especially, somebody who is, maybe an Anthony Bourdain or somebody famous where you think to yourself, you know, they're out there doing their show or if they're a musician, they're on tour or whatever it might be. I mean, Kate Spade. I didn't really know who she was. I'm pretty sure my daughters actually have some of her handbags. I learned that after her death. I didn't follow her as a designer, but then you think about somebody who created not one but two major design companies and was very successful at it. And you know, how do you predict something like that in someone that is so
and we'll get alive. We'll get to this here in a little bit because we hear epidemic proportions. It's gone up drastically since 1999. Hmm. And you hear these things. What's wrong with our culture that's happening? Suicide rate in 1950, a little higher than the last year that I had, which was 2015. Hmm. Suicide spike for women in 1970 was a little lower for men. but it's roughly always been around 13 and 14 per 100,000 people. And no matter what, no matter whether we have better diagnosis of it or what, it remains roughly the same. There may be an increase from 1999, but there's been the, you know, the you know, you have the, you can see it. It's the ups and downs that exist. But I mean, and they can't tie any of it to poverty because I saw that over the weekend. Well, the problem is people are worked themselves to death. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Pay attention. I saw that written all over social media this weekend. It's because this society works people to death. No. Do you know how hard people used to have to work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you ever work in an old-time steel mill?
Yeah. I'd love to be able to solve the equation. I'd love to be able to just have the mind to be able to analyze it and properly identify it and then help people by predicting it or, you know, whatever we're going to do. But again, it's hard because people who suffer with it, they're not going to tell you that. They're not always going to give you the sign. You know, and then I saw the feedback, you know, it is hard for people to identify with the mentality of not wanting to be here. The juxtaposition of that, yes. And then the beautiful letter, the goodbye letter that Charles Krauthammer wrote about, you know, and here's a man who, after his diving accident, was a quadriplegic, was, you know, and was very, this goodbye letter to his fans and colleagues and everyone, was very grateful for the life that he had. It was limited since that accident, but a beautiful life, as he said it, and was, you know, just so it's hard to sometimes identify with that mentality of suicide. But the one thing that has to be considered, and a lot of experts will tell you, is these are individuals who in that moment believe the world is better off without them.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. You know, I saw a couple of posts. Well, it's pure selfishness. And yeah, from someone who doesn't have depression, you can look at it and say, yeah, how could you do that to your kids? It's so selfish.
Right.
But if you're in the mindset where your life, if you are that mentally ill, where you believe you existing actually hurts your kids, mm-hmm. And that's the one thing. I've never, from what I know, have ever had depression. Never thought, you know, of anything like committing suicide. I mean, it's. Mm-hmm. I've always been too busy, to be honest with you. I've always been too busy. And even on my downtime, I mean, I just, my mind doesn't ever go to those areas. Mm-hmm. And as I've said, one thing about depression that gets you to death that's so hard, I think, for people that don't suffer from depression have is the instinct to survival and not die is so strong.
Right.
That if you aren't depressed and don't get to that moment, you can't fathom the fear of dying being submissive to wanting to kill yourself.
Right.
You just can't. And that's the thing. And it's funny because I'll tell you the story about a guy I know in the media in New York that ran for political office here in the last 6 months and lost. Mm-hmm. But he came out and said, you know, he has depression. Mm-hmm. And he said, it's time for me to come out and do it. So whether if I do it, then other people may, you know, try to, you know, find out or, you know, get the help that they can get. He goes, I know now that, you know, I'm targeted. And I thought to myself, that's a great point. I mean, could you ever run for political office? But he never said. He said he was depressed. He never got to the point because I was wondering, is he going to say that I wanted to commit suicide? And he never said it in the article. He just said he had depression. But from what I can tell from I was doing some research from Harvard, the Harvard research that was done, there's a ton of different varieties of levels of depression.
Yeah, right.
That you can be depressed and never want to commit suicide. You're just a depressed person. Mm-hmm. Then you can have depression to the point of wanting to commit suicide. Not all depressed people ever get to the point of committing suicide.
Right.
So we'll get to that and more. Plus, Charles Krauthammer, as you said, Robert De Niro says, F. Trump at the Tonys. Supreme Court decisions that may come up soon. The Twitter CEO apologizes for eating a Chick-fil-A. Did you see that one?
Mm-hmm.
My favorite story. Do we have a Triple Crown controversy?
Mm-hmm.
Sure about that? Mm-hmm. Is Justify one?
Mm-hmm.
And the stablemate they thought might have helped block some other horses from getting in the position.
Right.
And are we surprised? Justify 15% of his breeding rights owned by George Soros? Pure socialism.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Block the others so only one can succeed.
Yes. Devin Nunes sets a deadline for the DOJ to provide documents on the FBI spy informant, plus your calls and comments. We got a great show ahead, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls, 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Yeah, the when I got the news and then read Charles Krauthammer's letter. Wow. I realized, you know, because we always talk about when we feel sadness about a celebrity who we might have never met and the emotions that you feel. And, you know, I think of when Robin Williams died. I remember where I was when Robin Williams died.
Hmm.
And it was at a baseball game. And it just went through. I was looking at the phone. I said, oh, no, Robin Williams died. You could almost see the ripple of people because it went right for me. The people in front of me heard me, and Robin Williams died. It almost was like a mini wave going down of people just turning their heads in one section saying, wow.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he had a huge impact. But I will tell you, the letter that Charles Krauthammer wrote talking about the fact that he has terminal cancer, that hit me hard. And I realized I've never met him before. But I've admired him because he's a critical thinker.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized how important it is in the public arena to have critical thinkers out there. We didn't always agree with Charles.
Right.
On the show, probably about 90% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
10% of the time we didn't. But when you know that somebody's a critical thinker, you're willing to listen to that last 10% that you disagree with because you've seen what the base of what they believe comes from, and he had such just a great sense of humor. But
he's one of those funny guys you don't suspect him of being funny, and then all of a sudden here comes just in the delivery of maybe a monologue or a thought,
the dry humor.
You know, all of a sudden there it is, and it's just, you know, was great. I mean, it was always great to witness, and these last 10 months, nearly a year without seeing him on the panel. You know, on Fox News,
I was expecting him back.
You know,
there was an anticipation.
And he wrote in his letter, there was good thought about coming back, and that, you know, his battle had been over, and that he had won. And then in the last month or so, that cancer coming back very aggressively. So our thoughts and prayers with him and his family. For Cobra Electronics, here's your forecast.
Entering another week of a similar pattern that we've seen in the past week, with areas of Texas mainly dry, the desert southwest hot and dry, California not much rain in the forecast for the week ahead, the Pacific Northwest will see heavy amounts of rain. The National Weather Service says the greatest rainfall for the week ahead will be on the northern border of Iowa and Minnesota. Much of the Corn Belt due for about 2 inches of rain over the next 7 days. But corn has been planted and is emerging. West Virginia, Virginia, and North Carolina also set to see heavy amounts of rainfall for the week ahead. Chicago looking very nice. High of 77, mostly sunny conditions. For Dallas, the heat continues. Sunshine 95, and not a lot of rain in sight for the week ahead. In Phoenix, we'll see 106 as the high today under clear skies. Denver, beautiful, sunny, and 88. There's your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Join Gary and Eric in the Octagon now. 1-866-90-RED-EYE.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE, if you would like to get in. So the president, here we go, in Singapore.
Yeah, he's ready to go. Looks like a little bit of euphoria, in fact, surrounding the summit with North Korea. Is this going to actually end up where North Korea has no more nukes? Bob Costantini is in Singapore, and he's covering this for us. Bob, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Eric and Gary. I may actually have to bolt at any moment now because they may be moving us, but I'll be able to talk to you for a few minutes. And we just saw the president greeted by the Prime Minister, Prime Minister Lee of Singapore, welcomed here. The host country, the president thanked them for his hospitality and professionalism and friendship. And that was it. It was basically small talk. The president, though, did say he has a very important meeting tomorrow in particular, and that he thinks it's going to work out pretty well. So we'll see. This is the first time, obviously, a U.S. leader and a North Korean leader have met face-to-face.
Bob, how much FaceTime will the two get?
Nukes are at stake, by the way, too.
Right, yes. Yeah, sure, yeah. Yes. And how much FaceTime will they get together? I mean, how much sitting down would it actually be between Kim Jong-un and President Trump?
Yeah. Well, we're not exactly sure, but they will be meeting face-to-face apparently relatively early. And then they may be alone, according to what we understand. This is just some sort of speculation. They may be meeting face-to-face early on, just the two of them with interpreters to try to feel each other out. You know, the president said last week this could be a summit about attitude as much as anything else. So that's that may be where he's coming from in terms of preparation. He even said just the other day in Quebec that he'll know probably within the first few minutes whether or not that there's this summit's going to prove fruitful for him. And as I say, its take is North Korea's nuclear weapons, the weapons it has, how much is Kim Jong-un willing to truly denuclearize and totally denuclearize, which is the president's goal, and what does he expect in return from Mr. Trump? What will he get? The president has been saying a lot of nice things about Kim Jong-un, including suggesting that his country could do very well economically with trade with the United States, get more food from the United States, and be better off. But we'll wait and see. This is so very totally uncharted territory, in that not only is it the first time leaders from these two countries are meeting, but it's the first time you go into this kind of meeting without this kind of summit, without any great knowledge of what's going to happen. The president indicates he might just walk out at any moment if that's the way he feels, if that's what he feels is necessary, if he thinks it's not going to be fruitful.
Right. That is a little bit different than a G7 summit, which is mostly about trade and economics. This is about something very different.
But even if you view the SALT talks from back during the Cold War, you had an idea of what was going on in each other's country.
Right.
Well, I mean, at least we had an idea what was going on in the former Soviet Union. What does a president really know? What do we really know about North Korea being the closed society that they are?
Yeah, and again, as we know, this was arranged relatively hastily. The president, at the urging of South Korea, the South Korean leaders who visited the president with the invitation back in March, and he accepted it very quickly, had canceled it, a couple of weeks ago on the spur of the moment, and then a day later it was back on. So this is, this is not your typical high-level summit.
Right.
And obviously it comes with the background of what happened at the G7 meeting in Quebec, and the president leaving relatively early, the SNIT that he is now in, and SNIT might be a light word actually, but the difficult situation that now exists trade-wise between the United States and especially Canada and the other nations, issuing a communique that the president decided he wasn't going to sign off on. And whether or not some of the harsh things that were said about Justin Trudeau yesterday on the talk shows by some of the president's own staffers about trade and being stabbed in the back and that kind of thing. So
special place in hell
for nations who don't support you.
Yeah, yeah.
I think at the moment, at least, especially with Canada, we're going to have a full-blown trade war for the time being.
Right.
I did try to ask the president about that particular issue in vis-a-vis his coming here to talk with a North Korean dictator, but he did not respond to the questions during the photo opportunity.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be a busy couple of days for Bob Costantini there in Singapore,
Bob.
And we're going to let you get back to that. Thank you, Bob. We appreciate it. We'll hope to talk to you again soon.
Take care.
Bob Costantini there in Singapore, and you could, as you can imagine, the presence of the media is pretty massive because this is a big deal, but also kind of, as you can also imagine, very frantic because you don't know what the real schedule is going to be. It with this particular president, you know, it might be like he said last week, and I think he gave everybody pretty much a fair warning. He'll know pretty quickly whether this is going to be fruitful or not.
I thought there was some unfair criticism of the president when he said, look, I'm prepared as I have to be. I don't need to be ultra-prepared.
We know what we want from them.
I knew exactly what he meant. I mean, look, he's not going to be doing the specific negotiations. He's not going to be saying, look, we need the nukes to be taken from this site, the development to stop at this site. It's basically going to be, you get rid of everything, you get some of our help.
Right. Yeah.
And you know, the realistic version, and I think all along, and look, there are things you have to say before you go in to something like this. There are the niceties that you have to say, even if somebody is a brutal, murderous dictator.
Right.
Because the goal of the United States, and this is the thing people have to understand, the goal of the United States, number one, is to get the nukes out of there.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one. We're not going to save North Korea tomorrow. I was reading here, where is it, the story that some of the, here it is, from Daily Mail UK. North Korean officials said the isolated regime wants to modernize its economy. They said North Korea wants to become a normal country at a dinner back in April. No, they don't.
No, they don't. I mean, that's
pure propaganda coming from their side. What they want is enough to keep their economy going, to keep Kim Jong-un in his dictatorial reign. The last thing they would want to do is become a normal country, because immediately he would be overthrown. A normal country is a democracy. I mean, is there a normal dictatorship?
Is there such a thing in
the world? So
he wants to
keep his position as dictator, because as we said, if they modernize and become a normal country, he would be overthrown. Human rights charges of murder being thrown at him, and he would be executed.
Yes.
And he knows it.
Yep.
He saw what happened in Libya.
Yep.
So this is not to normalize the country, and people need to know that going in. And I do believe the response from the White House, when you actually hear, look, they have great doubts that this will succeed, and that's why I believe the president said, look, I'm willing to walk out, because all he's got to say is, you get rid of all nukes, we verify them, you get some of our help.
Right.
Are you in for that or not?
Real simple.
Real simple.
And you know, beyond that,
the details
will become about
the,
yeah, it will become then what those, what the requirements of the inspection process will be and everything else. I mean, you're going to have to build this process out because we've never done it. So they will. And if it's agreeable, I wouldn't be surprised if a Kim Jong-un, you know, pulls a fast one. That's to be expected.
Oh, I
wouldn't. It's a power play.
Yeah.
And then beyond that, I mean, you know, if you look at it, Kim Jong-un, like all dictators, the one thing they fear is any threat to their power. So this is why he's reached outside of his own borders and killed his half-brother. He has killed top members of his staff. These were seen as threats to his power. Another threat to his power is having a starving population. And because what you fear is a great uprising that would, again, as you mentioned, in any situation where they were going to normalize North Korea, it would mean the end of Kim Jong-un. So right now, I think he's facing a lot of pressure from a possible uprising. He wants to give the people of North Korea just enough. It won't be, by the way, enough by our standards, ever. I'm just convinced that he's never going to be that guy, because the other side of it, too, is, okay, you see this great wealth expansion in North Korea. It's all relative, by the way. But then, of course, people become empowered by that, and that would also right. be a threat to his power. So there's that balance that, that every dictator must
well,
make, but he's not going to
Kim
want
Jong-un,
a normal country.
Kim Jong-un does not have to respond to criticism the same way that public pressure can get the Communist Party of China, because now they have a huge, you know, middle class in in China, still not the majority of the country, but just because of the size of the country, they have a huge middle class. And so they have to be responsive on things like the environment, pollution. And so, again, they're still a communist country, but they are nothing like the closed society of the murderous regime of Kim Jong-un.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, it's not a compliment of China. It's just a
comparison.
It's a comparison. So, in this case, and we judge the president like we do all presidents individually by different scenarios and different issues. But even on this issue here, I think the president has done a great job on it. And if the president goes in and walks out after 15 minutes saying, nope, they're not serious, that's not a failure. And it's not a failure, because then we have the executive branch and the president knowing, look, we can't deal with them. We don't. There's no long, drawn-out, five-year, you know, discussion of getting rid of your nukes. Okay, you may get rid of it over here. All right, we'll give you $200 million in aid here to monitor one spot. No, you get rid of all of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's it. I mean, there's really not going to be – there's really not a negotiation here. There's not. They're either North Korea is agreeable to our terms or they are not.
And I think the president has, to me, he's made that clear.
Yeah. But, well, because I don't know anyone else in the world that would demand anything else from a Kim Jong-un.
Right.
You do away with your nukes. We can verify that. Then we'll talk. Then we'll at that situation, in that situation, we can expand trade, bring it back maybe to what it was with North Korea, or open the doors, really. To trade with the rest of the world. That's what's really happened in North Korea, has been about us pressuring their other trade partners. And that has choked him out. And we'll see if this works. But really, it's all down to North Korea. They're the ones who have to agree to our terms. There is nothing, there is no real quid pro quo, something we're willing to give up.
There. I don't believe there is going to be, after predicting something on Friday and being wrong so soon, I'm not going to predict. But I doubt you are going to see, well, look, we won't advance any more than we are right now if you give us cash or food.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that's going to happen. We're just going to keep where we are right now. We won't go any further. We'll keep our nuclear program the way it is. We won't advance any further than it is now if you give us some free food and free food, free cash, whatever. But we'll let you inspect some of the. I don't believe it's going to be that kind of a thing. I don't believe it's going to be a kind of UN thing in Iraq where you're running around trying to find everything, but know that you're being put off.
Mm-hmm. There are no multiple parties here you have to appease. Kim Jong-un has to do all the heavy lifting here. That's it.
That's the message that the president has sent out to me on this, at least.
Well, because I don't know of any other approach. You know, there's really he has to get in line. That's what this is all about.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. So this is actually, when I'm thinking about it, one of the most unique world events in a long, long time.
Yeah, it is.
You think about it, because even, you know, the negotiations before with the United States and the UN and everything else, this is the president. This is the president. And Kim Jong-un, and this is the president setting the terms, not the United Nations.
Right.
the president.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, because it's, you know, with if the UN was involved, obviously the pressure comes from, you know, all around. You have to appease many different parties, and that was kind of my comment going, you know, before into the break, is that really this is down to Kim Jong-un playing by the rules going forward.
Well, we may be using some of their inspectors, but
yeah,
but the fact is
in that process, negotiation is all about us and them.
Right. Who is setting the terms? It's the United States.
Yeah. And that's what all the other nations obviously have a keen interest,
which means
they want peace.
Which means, as I've said before, when we've had a lot in the past during the campaign, Trump supporters say we shouldn't be the policemen of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we shouldn't be, but we are. And the president understands that.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric. I'm Gary. Welcome. The Monday show will be a very, very interesting week, I'm sure. After the suicide of Anthony Bourdain, Kate Spade, last week, a lot of the talk has been, I think, on social media and the media itself. One of the things I saw that got to me was, you know, people just keep offering their thoughts and prayers. Thoughts and prayers aren't going to do it. Yeah, but what you're assuming is what goes on in somebody's individual mind is the responsibility of others. For people to wish and let other people know, family and friends and just people in general, the world, that the family is in your thoughts and prayers, there's nothing wrong with that at all. I saw that all over media. Well, thoughts and prayers, but we really don't care. We can't identify who a lot of people that suffer from depression are.
Right.
We hear that, you know, and looking at different research, you know, the thing is, you know, the bullying causes suicide. I saw this here. Let me see. 10 causes of depression. Summer weather.
Mm-hmm.
Bullying was another one. No, those aren't causes of depression. People who are depressed may react in a way where somebody who is not depressed, reacts. Somebody who is depressed might commit suicide, where somebody who does not suffer from depression would not.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, the vast majority of people in the world do not commit suicide. It is roughly, 13 been constant between 13 and 14 per 100,000 people in the United States commit suicide every year. That's a very, very small amount of people that do it. That's per 100,000, not 1,000, but 100,000 people. Has it gone up because you've heard a lot of that talk. It's gone up since 1999. It's suicide at an epidemic pace. Well, I don't know what that means. Those words don't mean anything. Epidemic, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean that it's greater now than ever before? Well, when you go back and you see 1950, the suicide rate was 21.2 for men out of 100,000 and 5.6 for women. Now, in 2015, the latest, 21 for men. This is 2015, 6 for women. And you see that it's fluctuated up and down. In 1970, it skyrocketed for women, 7.4. Women succeed at suicide less than men do, but they attempt it more times. The majority of people who attempt, who commit suicide successfully are white males. They can't find any type of poverty link to suicide. Can stress and poverty, if you are depressed, lead to suicide? Yes. Stressful situations can. Is it the cause? No. And so when you look at it, I mean, it's how the media covers a lot of this. I will tell you that I had an acquaintance. It was an old girlfriend's girlfriend's husband. I remained friends with her even after we broke up. And one time a group of everybody went to a show. And we went back to my old girlfriend's house. And her husband was there, who I talked to many times before. And we sat, and this goes back a long time ago, over 30 years, but we sat and drank beers till 4 in the morning after the show, talking and laughing. Mm-hmm. 3 days later, he put a shotgun in his mouth. Mm. To this day, I'm still stunned, stunned by it, because didn't see it coming. Nobody saw it coming. I don't feel guilty because I didn't know. You don't recognize the signs. Again, I think most people do their best, but mental illness and depression is something that the majority of people who are not depressed, especially when you get to the point of suicide, it is something that those that are depressed hide. They admit that they hide. I mentioned that there's a guy I knew. Used to work with him. I work at the same station with him on radio. I knew him when he was a teenager and when I first started doing talk radio, would call my talk show. Well, he got into radio. Well, he just announced he's, been a ton of different careers, written books, ran for political office, and came out the other day after the Anthony Bourdain death and said, we have to do more than just say get help and thoughts and prayers. Because I think he was talking more about himself, because people that are depressed have to be willing to come out who have gotten treatment, have to be the ones to come out to make it so other people will come out and do it. Now, I saw that calls to suicide hotlines went up drastically over the last couple of days, and that normally happens after it, but then they go back down again. Mm-hmm. But there seems to be this thing that it's society's fault in some way, that society or you are responsible if you're not depressed for people who are depressed not getting help. And I think that's just an unfair thing for anybody to say, because it's an incredible hard thing once you start reading on it. And I read a Harvard study on it and some of their analysis, and you see the millions of things that they talk about. Because they talk about chemical reactions. They go, but there's millions of chemical reactions. And you may get it right as a doctor, and you may not get it right as a doctor, because it may be partly a chemical reaction, or it may be part genetic, or it may be, and they go through all the different things, talking about how tough it is to diagnose it. But my old friend was talking about the fact that he's had it for years, and hid it from his wife. Mm-hmm. Because he said, when you have these thoughts, you don't want, now he didn't say that he had thoughts of committing suicide. He left that out. But when you have that is tough for somebody to understand. You and I talked about some of the social media things out there where people come out and say, how could you possibly commit suicide when you have a child? Mm-hmm. That's a selfish act and a completely, yeah. From somebody who doesn't suffer from depression, it is. Mm-hmm. But also is the act, we can't imagine committing suicide because the instinct for survival and living is what dominates us every day. And the majority of us who aren't depressed, we're not thinking about committing suicide. We aren't as, Kate Spade's husband or one of her friends, I forgot who it was, that said that she really was, when Robin Williams committed suicide, she really was pretty obsessed with it.
Right.
And when you, you know, see some things like that. But again, there are people that are moody. Is being moody a sign of depression, or are you just being moody? There are people out there that can be mean and can be dark. Does that mean they're actually depressed to the point of suicide? There's so many variables involved in it. And sure, you want to do the best, but people, sometimes all they have are thoughts and prayers. And my friend did write, suicide is 100% preventable. This is the guy who has depression.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe for him it is, but it's not.
Well, I don't know how to predict a situation for someone, you know, that's in that situation. I don't know how to predict any given moment that might be that moment where they make that decision. I don't know how you would do that. I don't know, even with someone who's going through depression, how you would know that they were going to get to a tipping point. And, you know, when you talk about a thought that in their mind that says the world is better off, including my children, my family, whoever it might be, my loved ones are better off. This life is better. This world is better without me. You know, that is so foreign to most people. I honestly don't know how you prevent someone getting to that point, how you know it's going to happen. There just isn't a way. And, you know, you would again, I think offering prayers for someone is always a positive. Is it enough? Again, I don't know. I guess the question, that begs another question. Again, how would you be with someone in a moment like that? How would you know? You most often hear it. This is something we never thought they would do. They seemed happy on the outside, especially with somebody who's in the public eye. You can see their public life, but even their family doesn't always see what they're going through. People closest to them don't always experience what they're going through. And so that makes it especially difficult. I would love to get to a point where I was confident and the medical community, more importantly, was confident that it is, you know, can be prevented and that they had the answers. But I just don't know where you get those answers. I don't. You know, and it's devastating. You know, it's especially sad for a public to, you know, lose a celebrity because you think you know that person. You think you've experienced who that person is. You know, you think you've become, you know, close to them because you've appreciated their work. Then you find out that even their family members and the people closest to them wouldn't have predicted this. And you realize how much you don't know them and what you don't know about them. And that's, I think, what makes it, you know, sad. The loss of life is always tragic. And with suicide, it's especially tragic.
866-90-RED-EYE.
The dates and location for the 36th annual Shell Rotella Super Rigs contest are set. Dave Waterman from Shell has the details.
We are going to be at White's Travel Center in Raphine, Virginia. It's a little bit outside of Lexington, Virginia, right off of I-81 and I-64. It was designed way back when as a way for Shell Rotella to give back to the trucking community, appreciation for all they did and all the support of our brand. It's an event that really encourages truckers to get together, whether they're going to show a show caliber truck or just their daily driver that might have some scratches and dings in it. It's open to all of them. And in fact, we encourage, as you know, the working truck. Judging, of course, is going to take place Thursday through Saturday. We're going to have a light contest taking place on Thursday, and then we'll do a truck parade down to Old Town Lexington. There's also be health checks available for truckers on site. We're going to do the scavenger hunt again so folks can walk away with prizes. Just on the Shell Rotella Super Rigs part of it, it's up to $25,000 in both cash and prizes.
They want to learn more. Where do they go?
Well, they can go to Rotella.com. They can also go to whitestravelcenter.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE. Mm-hmm.
Eye Radio. He's Eric Hurley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Some of the comments I saw over the weekend are celebrities get commit suicide, and it's all over the news. A veteran commits suicide, and it's not news. Mm-hmm. Well, of course. Celebrities always get publicity.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's just the way that it is. Now, when it comes to veteran suicide, we have heard many times that it's at epidemic levels. It's not. From the VA just last year, their latest report on veteran suicide, findings show there is a variability across the nation in the rates and numbers of death by suicide among veterans. Overall, the veteran rates mirror those of the general population in the geographic region, with higher rates in the western states. And they talk about that. If you look at some smaller areas, they sometimes have higher rates in a bigger area will have. We will see higher rates of suicide in some states with smaller populations. They mirror those of the general population. Remember, there was a Forbes article that was written a few years before this article that said they're talking about an epidemic. If you actually look at the numbers, it's not. Now, they say veterans are at higher risk. What that means, though, I'm not sure. Does that mean because of PTSD, it puts you at higher risk, even though the number of suicides from veterans basically mirror the general population as a whole?
Right.
Would that be a risk factor?
When you talk, clinical depression, I think you get into a whole new arena when you talk PTSD, something that the overwhelming majority of people will never experience. That kind of traumatic effect on the human mind and what it does permanently, you know, the lasting effects of that. I had one veteran talk to me about one time, you know, we go to basic training, but you know, when you come home, there's no exit training. There's no, you know, how do you reassimilate into life? We know about the Chris Kyle story and the concerns and issues that he dealt with coming home, trying to reassimilate into a normal population that is not at war. I don't even pretend to know the answers, but I can't imagine how incredibly difficult that must be. You know, I hear the stories and I've met a few veterans and they tell me you're always in that mode because your mind essentially has been retrained. But then beyond that, beyond the military training and what you're trained to look out for in the theater and in country, you come home. How do you reverse that? How do you again reassimilate? Some are able to do it and others just struggle with it for life. And I know, I mean, I've got family members that do, still do. And it's been a long, long time. So that's something that kind of effect, I can't imagine. Being a psychiatrist, being someone who's highly trained, highly educated in that area, that still must be one of the great mysteries in how you treat that.
And getting some feedback, and when we talked earlier about, you know, where we saw on social media, and we're getting some response on that, you know, that suicide is selfish. And that's something that many people have said before.
Mm-hmm.
And it is.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at it from our point of view,
mm-hmm.
when you look at it from somebody who's not depressed, but if you believe your life is worthless and you truly believe it because of the depression and mental illness that you have, and that you being dead is better for your family, that's a perspective that none of us who are not in a depressed state to commit suicide will ever be able to understand.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's just something, again, which goes back to that, the what is a foreign thought to the overwhelming majority of people. But that's something for, you know, to learn from, to understand, to try and understand if we're ever to get to any solutions. I can't imagine what those solutions are. I don't know. But I do have great faith in the people who study that. I do have great faith in the people who have made made it their life to find those answers.
We've asked, though, I mean, how many hundreds, thousands of years will it be where you can actually figure out the human brain?
Right. Yeah, and we would never be able to, we can't read minds, we can't, so it's all about communication. Sometimes there is no communication, even with those that are closest to them. So, and again, it's especially tragic.
Undeniably irrefutable, Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Just wanted to finish off the discussion about Anthony Bourdain's suicide and also Kate Spade, which brought suicide back to the forefront over the weekend. And so we've talked about just a variety of different things there. You and I both know a young woman who committed suicide,
mm-hmm.
who I used to work with pretty close. She was an intern when I worked with her. And then when you and I first got together, even though she wasn't an intern anymore, she worked for a different station and would come down and visit us in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
Not when we did Red Eye, this was before we did Red Eye. And you remember the one time she came on the air with us? I can't even remember why, but she came on the air with us, and
right.
it was a lot of fun. Well, she was an intern and probably for a year. So I probably worked with her for a year. She was always around the studio where I was doing my show at the time. And then, you and I started working together. She got a job at another station, but in the same building, and would visit us. But I would see her occasionally in the station. And then when she was no longer, she got another job at another radio station, when she'd call me about once every 6 months just to talk about the business and everything else and what she was looking for. And I got a call before Thanksgiving. I didn't get the call. I got a voice message from her. And it was like a 10-minute voice message. And she said, "Hey, what's going on? I just wanted to talk to you, and I just want to pick your brain because I want to move on for this job. I'd like to do something else and everything else. And I want to get a letter of recommendation from you." And so it was all business related, and it was talking about the things that she wanted to do and everything else and all that. I remember thinking to myself, a 10-minute message. And at the end, she just said, "You know something? You know, you can tell I'm trying to work all this stuff through my mind. So don't call me back right now. Look, I'll call you back in a couple of weeks. Have a happy Thanksgiving. I'll give you a call in a couple of weeks. Let me get my thoughts together about what kind of letter of recommendation I want you to," and all that. But I just thought it was strange that it was 10 minutes. But I said, okay, I'll call her after, you know, Thanksgiving's over. It was right after Thanksgiving, got the notice that she had committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Haunts me every Thanksgiving. It has made it so when somebody calls me who I haven't talked to in a while, I call them right back.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there's no way, because you sit there and you say, "Well, man, I should have known." Yeah, there's no way. I didn't know. Never saw any of the signs. How many times have I gotten that call from somebody who says, "You know something? Let me call you back when I get my thoughts together. It's a business-related thing. I need this from you, but let me call you back. Have a nice holiday." Oh, okay, sure. I'm not going to bother them right now because that's what I was thinking.
Right.
And, her never had a funeral. Her family just really didn't talk about it at all. Never had a funeral, never had a wake, anything. Mm-hmm. And it was devastating. And never saw it coming. Never saw that one.
Yeah.
You know, you knew her, so. I
mean, you hear that quite often from the people who, even their family members, but where they may say something like, "I know they were struggling, but I wouldn't have ever predicted this." There was nothing, you know, that told me it was at this point.
No.
Yeah.
And again, it's made it so I always return calls ASAP. It doesn't mean I, by doing that, I'm ever going to prevent a suicide. It just, you know, it just, that's one of the things that you just, you wish you had known. And in the time, I mean, we'd sit down and we'd have talks about everything. You know, what was going on in her life, her family, her boyfriends. I mean, she talked to me about everything because she was a lot younger. And, you know, sort of, you know, sort of the mentor protege kind of thing.
Right.
And so, you know, and so that's always every Thanksgiving. And I know the exact date of her death. I won't say it, but I know the exact. And every day that every time that comes. And the thing is, around that time of the year is when I go back to see if her Facebook page is still operating, and it is. And it's heartbreaking to see it.
Right.
It's heartbreaking to see her. You know, you see her last message, and this goes back almost a decade ago.
Mm-hmm.
And still it's heartbreaking.
Yeah. Sure.
So I just thought I'd mention that. So it's because you just everything I saw on the weekend and people being so judgmental as if they understand the facts of it all from their perspective of not having depression. And I've known enough people. I mentioned the one gentleman that I know who just, you know, publicly came out and said, I've been suffering from a long time. I would have never figured that from this. I call him a kid because he's younger, but he's 40 now. But when I first met him, he was like 16, 17.
Right.
And never would have known that ever. And I'm telling you, anybody who read his column the other day would have never guessed that he suffered from depression ever. He's an author. I've read a couple of his books. He's an author, back in radio again now, ran for political office. Nicest guy you ever going to meet, always smiling, always laughing, got that keen sense of humor, always projecting that on social media. Everything that you see on the outside, you say, normal.
Mm-hmm.
And as he said, not normal. And nobody knew it for years.
Yeah, it is something that a lot of people won't talk about. A lot of people will think either they can deal with it or that they would possibly be embarrassed by, for whatever reason, that they just don't want to have the discussion. And then I'm sure there's some thought that I don't want to get into the discussion because I believe that could make it worse if I'm just talking to a friend or family member.
Mm-hmm.
I again wouldn't be able to tell you what works best for any given person. But there are people out there that are clinically trained and have the education that can help.
And then I know other people that I believe have at least some major personality problems. Mm. I mean, in there, I don't mean that just they're mean to be with, but they don't look at life right.
Mm.
And I've actually made it known to people who I know are enabling them.
Mm-hmm.
That's heartbreaking.
Yeah, right.
And when you've actually had the discussion with that person, you know, hey, you might want to go check it. No.
Mm-hmm.
That is, and that is probably more prevalent than a lot of people are willing to admit. That you sit there and you do know some people and you go, yeah, that person actually does, and nobody wants to get help for them. You know, they talked about the opioid crisis, and that might have something to do with the increase over the last couple of years. And it might a little bit. I don't know. I mean, I just,
right.
Maybe if you're involved, and I guess Anthony Bourdain I was reading one column. Was it Ben Shapiro wrote a column on it?
Mm. Right.
And said that he had, you know, admitted that he had, I don't know, did heroin maybe in the past or whatever.
Right.
But I don't know if you're currently a drug addict on hard drugs, whether that increases your risk of suicide. Maybe it does if you're depressed.
I would think anything that clouds the mind would bring about a false sense of reality. And that false sense of reality could well include the thought that the world is better off without you. So I could see that logic, you know, behind that theory or condition, situation that somebody might be in. And that's the other side of, you know, the, you know, you talk about recreational drugs. More socially acceptable today for marijuana and alcohol. But alcohol abuse, I mean, it's going to, it's again, anything that's going to cloud the mind to that degree, if you are suffering, that I'm sure can be something that makes the situation worse.
Well, you saw that story the other day. Buffalo Bills offensive guard, former Buffalo Bills offensive guard and Miami Dolphins, Richie Incognito, mm-hmm. was in that gymnasium, mm-hmm. and they actually committed him because he's out now.
Mm-hmm.
But he was just, you know, they thought he would be of harm to himself or others in that gym because he was acting so irrationally.
Right.
But he's out.
Mm-hmm.
My point is, how do you... And I'm not saying he is. I'm just saying that he's an example of somebody who had to legally be committed against his will for observation.
Mm-hmm.
My point is, even in that case, he's out and he may be fine. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what they diagnosed him with. But the fact is, it's very tough to commit somebody involuntarily. So how do you know?
I mean, I guess there are outward signs in terms of what they're saying. Sometimes it becomes very clear whether they're serious about those intentions or not. You have to assume that they are.
I was watching somebody on ESPN talk about him and say, look, this is really private for him, but he's been dealing with a lot of, you know, issues. Mm-hmm. And it was clear it was mental issues.
Right.
And so we know it's out there. We know it exists. Clinically, we know that it exists. That's why when we talked about, you know, again, and we have got some response, it's a selfish act. Well, yeah, if you're not depressed and you've got kids and you take your life, yeah, to all of us, it is it's the ultimate of selfish acts to not be there for your kid. But we're not thinking that death is something that we want to consider. We're not thinking that killing ourselves is something over a period of time that is a superior way than staying alive.
Mm-hmm.
And so that changes the perspective of somebody who is depressed and or mentally ill.
Right.
That they feel their family is worse with them alive.
Right. That they're doing damage to their family by existing.
Exactly. So, I mean, that's the thought process that I've gotten from people that are depressed who, you know, have thought about committing suicide.
Mm-hmm.
They feel the world, including their family, their wife, their kids, everybody is better off without them.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, from our point of view, selfish. From their point of view, no, the right thing to do.
Right.
The thing I can never get over is that you're depressed enough and your brain works where your instinct of self-preservation goes.
Yeah,
that is the one thing that is, I think, is tougher, the toughest for me to understand, because it's just not a thought I've ever had. I mean, I don't mm-hmm. think I'll, hopefully I'll never have that thought,
mm-hmm.
but right. I've never, I mean, it's never even been where I've even, probably I've, you know, I'm talking about suicide right now is more than I've ever thought about it in my life, in my entire life, because I probably haven't spent 10 seconds on that.
Right.
All right, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Coming up following the top of the hour, the G7 meeting. By the way, I agreed with what the president said, that the goal should be zero tariffs.
Right.
No tariffs. Zero tariffs across the board. It was great to see. I went, wow, do I really see this? Yes. The memes popping up all over the place. The president says no tariffs. G7 says no. Why? There actually was no negotiation on that, just so everybody knows.
No.
I wish that the president and his negotiating team on trade would... I would have been the most pleased person if he would have said that from the very beginning. Our goal with everyone in G7 is to have no tariffs across the board. We won't tariff your products. You won't tariff our products. We also won't limit exports or imports. And we also will not attempt to control your manufacturing wage in your country. Free trade is free trade across the board. That's what he made clear the other day was the eventual goal, but that's not what they're negotiating at all.
No, it's likely that the tariffs that are in place are going to remain there for a little while, at least.
Well, the
question is, how long can they sustain?
Well, the tariffs are in place now. I mean, NAFTA has, they have some tariffs, we have some tariffs, all free trade agreements have tariffs. They all have limits and import quotas and export quotas. I will admit, I don't know if anyone has ever gone as far as the president wanting to, with Mexico, have a $16 manufacturing wage for certain manufacturing jobs in another country. I've never seen a free trade agreement that went that far. But I was glad to see the president say it, but I don't see any indication that is a goal of the administration. I wish it was, because I agree with his statement completely.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. We do appreciate it. The president in Singapore. It will be interesting to see what happens over the next couple of days, won't it?
Yeah, I wouldn't expect much to come out of it. It's mainly going to be, I don't know what, I don't want to say photo ops, but that's pretty much it. It's all going to be about the handshake, if you will. That's what this is, an icebreaker. President basically saying it last week. The media's, let me see if I can pull it up again at CNN.com, the front page. All right. It's not there anymore. But they had, Kim Jong-un will be preparing. Because the president, they asked him, well, are you prepared? Well, there's nothing to prepare for. It's all about, the mood of the room.
Right.
But they went again after him about the words he was using. He says, look, I've got this, this feel. After negotiating how many countless deals over the years, he's talking about the feel of the room. Everybody knows that. But the media's acting like they're just now grasping this concept. That's all this is. There's not going to be agreement. Nothing's going to be signed. There's not going to be anything formal done here, except for, again, the two sitting face to face. That's it. And he's basically saying, well, I'll pretty much know within a few minutes whether or not this guy is serious.
Trump doesn't know nothing on plutonium.
And it's beyond ridiculous. It really is. They're acting as if That's odd for a president to say, well, there's nothing to prepare for. We'll know this is about a meeting. This is about us meeting and nothing else. This really isn't. Don't expect that there's going to be some huge agreement signed at a table. That it's not that. So, but the media wants you to, you know, believe like Trump is the, and, the, and then the hashtag, two dictators.
I hadn't seen that one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's of course ridiculous.
Well, and these, and this is the ridiculous behavior. By the way, don't stop. Please make sure you do nothing but ramp this up for Robert De Niro or any of them.
Bill Maher.
You know, any of them. Yeah, yeah. Great. Mm-hmm. Go ahead and root for it. Go ahead and root for a horrible economy. And by the way, we know that. But keep saying that.
Keep
you're
saying
doing
it, yes.
And we know that the Democrats on Capitol Hill want that. They're okay with that. Because then a couple of things, they can blame it on Trump. And then beyond that, they can offer you more freebies if the economy tanks. I mean, it works for them on two levels. But this is all the left has right now. You know, Robert De Niro is hailed as this great actor, this
standing ovation.
You know, and then it's the lowest of hanging fruit there is. In fact, it's the fruit that's already on the ground. And they think they're the intellectual ones. They think they're the smarter ones. Well, I dare say Trump's followers weren't watching the Tonys. Trump's support base probably not tuning into the Tonys. I'm just guessing on that one.
Look, I don't like to make predictions.
But Or assessments, or ratings assessments
or
without the Nielsen people.
Yes, or ratings assessments of the Tonys.
But I'll just say that demo, probably not the number one demo.
Probably.
But guess what? You did motivate the base at the Tonys, the Trump base, through that kind of behavior. Don't stop. Please don't.
So you don't think
please
it was
don't
number,
learn
you
from
don't,
it.
You don't think it took the night ratings in Omaha?
I'm guessing probably not. It's that behavior. That's part of it. This is why Hollywood, you know, Hollywood used to be filled, you know, with a bunch of original ideas. Well, now the industry is what? Let's make a new Spider-Man movie, like from the very beginning of the story, every 3 years. It's just become a parody of itself. It really has. There are some original ideas that are out there, some good work, the creative work that's being done. But it's losing its connection with people because it's not about the work anymore. It's about the agenda. I was even watching one of those, and I had not seen it. I'm not a big comic book hero movie guy, but there was one that was, you know, it was up on one of the channels, and it was like, okay, it's up there. I'll watch it. I didn't rent it. It was already on one of the streaming sites. So I was looking at it, and I was like, all right. And about 20 minutes in, here comes the agenda. And it really didn't have anything to do with the storyline. I thought, yeah, you're just going out of your way to make that point. This is why people are turning it off. This is why people are tuning away. This is why people are deciding to go outside, to not go watch a movie, to not watch the NFL, to not do these things that you believe this is your mission statement. This is going to be your mission statement. Our agenda will rule this presentation. Okay, great. You go do that. We'll go do something else.
What you have a lack, and that's why I will miss... I can't think of his name here at the moment. I got mind blank here.
Charles Krauthammer.
Charles Krauthammer. I'm sorry. I just said mind blank. Is because he's a critical thinker. And is there any critical thinker on the left? Can you tell me anybody who is a critical thinker of the left? You and I were talking about the fact that we had both were looking at, and he works for our company now, Ben Shapiro. and the interview, the podcast he did with the conservative Jonah Goldberg. Both were never Trumpers. They didn't, neither voted for Trump, neither did Krauthammer.
Right.
But we still consider them, we call them all critical thinkers. Charles especially. As I said, I agree with about 90% of what Charles said. The other 10% I did not agree with, including, but it's a personal decision, it's not an issue of them not voting for Trump, or I did. I thought that when you have a binary choice of clearly somebody who is superior to somebody who I believe is crooked and corrupt, that, you know, you go with Trump. To me, that was to you and I, that was sort of a no-brainer. Not that we don't have our disagreements with Trump.
Right.
One coming up here in just a couple of moments on the G7 meetings, but I have no problem separating the two. I have no problem looking at what's going on in North Korea and saying, doing a good job there. I mean, I don't see much of what he has done wrong in leading up to that. I can look at that and say, okay, there, next issue over here. With Obama, we went issue by issue by issue by issue by issue by issue by issue. Now, but Obama was different. With Charles Krauthammer, I disagreed with about 10% and agreed with about 90%. With Obama, I disagreed with about 99.9% and might have agreed with 0.5% of something that he did at one point. But I could lay out to you what I disagreed, you know, with him on. Specifically, so could a Krauthammer, so could a Jonah Goldberg, so could a Ben Shapiro. That is what is what I'm concerned about in our society right now, is there seems to be a complete lack of that on the left, and I believe it's growing on the right. We're critical thinking. Thank goodness there are some good critical thinkers coming in. But one of the things this whole weekend, and had a couple of Twitter comments back and forth and a couple of Facebooks from people about, you know, the tariffs. Everybody's giving me a political argument, not an economic argument. And they don't seem to see the difference. They seem that they seem to believe that a slogan is policy. This weekend on tariffs, he was all over the place. And he was all over the place talking about the fact that, well, what we might need to look into is, you know, complete elimination of all tariffs. Really? You should have, if that was really your goal, you should have shot that out of the cannon during the campaign and never stopped with, I believe in free trade across the board, because that's not what your negotiators are doing. That's not what you're telling them to do. So that came out. He put out a tweet. The United States will not allow, this was the most bizarre one, the United States will not allow other countries to impose massive tariff and trade barriers on its farmers, workers, and companies. Talking about the United States will not allow other countries to impose massive tariffs and trade barriers on its farmers, workers, and companies while sending their product to our country free, tax-free. What he's saying is, if they're going to tax their consumer, we need to tax our consumer. And there was somebody who listens to this show who put that on Facebook. I said, do you understand what that means?
Yeah, that's not retaliatory.
Right. What he's saying is, those other countries tax their people, we got to tax ours. That's conservative? And people, this meme was going, the memes were going out there. You know, with that tweet, all right, he's being strong. Do people even read anymore?
Well, because you're imposing a tax on the consumer. It's not the government.
And I wish that that Trump was promoting what he said he wished the direction. Well, if you wish for it to go in a particular direction, then go for it.
Right.
If you wish to knock down all trade barriers, I'm with you on that. But I don't believe... I know that's not what you're doing.
No, that's not.
That's not what you're trading.
What's happened so far?
So why is he saying he wants to knock down all? Which, by the way, a ton of conservatives jumped on and said, "Look, see, Trump wants free trade. This is what he's for." And the other countries are saying, "No, I don't know that." And if they are, then he should come out as a strong free trader. and say, I want to knock down all barriers with Canada. I want to knock down all barriers with Mexico. But we know that's not the truth.
Well, and the, you know, the idea of taxing your own consumer.
Oh, that blows my mind.
Because that's not retaliatory.
Right.
Who is having to pay for it?
And I see more conservatives jumping on the tariff bandwagon. We've talked about how the Republican Party and conservatives have changed. Debt, they don't care about anymore. Now, they believe that the right person can control the international economy to the benefit of the United States. Good article in Forbes that I was reading that said, by what measure is the United States getting killed? GDP, you and I brought this up last week. Mm-hmm. GDP, our GDP has grown much faster because Trump says over the last 20 years we've got screwed. Mm-hmm. Go back and look at the GDP. Whose GDP is a lot better than Europe's? Ours. Whose GDP is a lot better than Canada? A heck of a lot better than Canada. Ours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've seen that growth.
Right.
And we've seen that growth with the existence of trade.
With the modern Western... Now, if we do have trade with countries that are third world, for example, Mexico may have higher growth at times, but that's because they are so far below. Like China's growth rate is a lot greater because every day people are going from massive poverty to even getting a minimum wage job is a skyrocketing of the economy,
right?
Based on the comparison. But when you compare us to the major world power, the major Western free market first world societies over the last 20 years, when we're getting killed, our GDP is through the roof compared to these other countries. So where are we getting killed?
Well,
and Eric, on tariffs, I've been talking about it for 29 years. Nobody can give me the economic argument. Everybody gives me the political argument.
Right. And so if the president wants to go to negotiate, and he talks about a better deal, well, you can be very clear and concise. If it is truly what you want is to take down all trade barriers, that's something I don't know of anyone who wouldn't get that. If you're talking about, hey, we want no tariffs at all.
At all. We want to bring down, and that's what
I don't know anybody who wouldn't understand that.
If the president wishes to do that, we here at Red Eye Radio are 100% behind that statement that he made over the weekend.
Work to that effort and work fast.
And if the other countries,
the EU is saying we were headed toward that. We were trying to get to that point.
Yeah, the EU was saying we said we'll take down all tariffs,
right,
on industrial products, mm-hmm, on cars, on car parts, on industrial products. We presented that to them and said we'll take down all of our tariffs if you will, and they refused.
Right.
So who's telling the truth?
And if they're not telling the truth, call them out on it.
Yeah, if they're not, yep, call them out. And he didn't. And what he said over the weekend, that should be the goal. All. I'm thinking to myself, did what's his name from CNBC
get Larry in his, Kudlow.
Did Larry Kudlow get in his ear just for a second? All right, all trade barriers are down. He's never promoted that before, but he promoted that after going into the G7.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you look at the better part of 40 years from this president. As, you know, just in making comments on talk shows, has talked about tariffs. This is something that he's talked about extensively. So the question is, has he had a change of heart?
And I don't know what the beef is between him and Trudeau. Did he go in and say, I'll stop all the tariffs?
Right.
And then Trudeau, after they agreed to drop all the tariffs, came out and said, well, no, we're going to put tariffs on you. I didn't see that. If that's what happened, well, then Trudeau is completely to blame.
Yes.
But nobody has told me that that's happened. Nobody's explained what the specific insults and lies were across the board.
I've been working to find that out myself.
Yep.
But the only thing we do here is the only thing we see is the comments made.
We never get
special place in hell comment.
We never get to the policy of what's actually being discussed and negotiated.
What was discussed between the two parties?
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Mm-hmm.
He's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara. But what the president said over the weekend before the G7 summit about maybe the goal should be getting rid of all tariffs across the board. We are in total agreement that that's what we should do and we should promote it. And if that's what we promote, our trade policy should be, and Canada doesn't like it, I think you've got a solid point that Canada would be wrong. But I see no indication as of yet that that's where the negotiators are headed at all.
Right.
And the other thing is, I think it is wrong to not attempt to have a united G7 or G8, not including Russia, but including Australia or India, if you're going to add one, not Russia, but add one or two as a united front against China.
For VDO Roadlog, here is your forecast.
Entering another week of a similar pattern that we've seen in the past week, with areas of Texas mainly dry, the desert southwest hot and dry, California not much rain in the forecast for the week ahead. The Pacific Northwest will see heavy amounts of rain. The National Weather Service says the greatest rainfall for the week ahead will be on the northern border of Iowa and Minnesota. Much of the Corn Belt due for about 2 inches of rain over the next 7 days. But corn has been planted and is emerging. West Virginia, Virginia, and North Carolina also set to see heavy amounts of rainfall for the week ahead. Chicago looking very nice. High of 77, mostly sunny conditions. For Dallas, the heat continues. Sunshine 95, and not a lot of rain in sight for the week ahead. In Phoenix, we'll see 106 as the high today under clear skies. Denver, beautiful, sunny, and 88. There's your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Do-gooder tough guys, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Red Eye Radio.
I saw the movie. Did you see the movie on it?
No.
Where Russia developed cold fusion?
Mm-hmm. No.
Oh, I can't think
of
the name.
I didn't see it.
Oh, yes. The Saint.
Oh, yeah. Which was...
That's a Hollywood movie.
From a novel, right? It was based on a novel?
Yes. Val Kilmer. Mm-hmm. And the woman developed cold fusion.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, you know, Russia, for some reason, was based in Russia, and she ended up, I don't know if they stole the technology or did whatever, but he saved the world and saved Russia because they had cold fusion. So the last caller was trying to make the point that since cold fusion exists, that all the companies, all the world will come here to invest because we have cold fusion.
Mm-hmm.
If you wondered why we didn't continue with the call, that's where it was going. So we have unlimited energy sources that just we have.
Right. I think the new version of that is that Tony Stark developed it.
Well, the original thing on that, it said that companies will come here because we have energy sources, and I thought that he was talking about oil and natural gas and all that, and mm-hmm. that's very important. But, you know, one of the problems that we have, and this is the one thing, and this is why most of the calls we have, all the calls we have that talk about, well, this is what Trump's trying to do, they're guessing.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea what Trump thinks now on trade. What I believe is happening is I believe he's always been a tariff kind of person. I do think that Larry Kudlow is sticking around and losing all credibility because he still thinks he can impact the president And I do believe that it's in the realm of possibility that the president came out with that total free trade, no tariff statement because of Kudlow. And I think what you've got happening, you've got Ross, you've got Navarro, and these are tariff people. And the president's a tariff person.
Mm-hmm.
But you've always had somebody in his other ear saying, it's not the way to go. Right. Look at the stock market every time you mention it. Look at the White House. And remember, right before he left, what came out? The White House Council of Economics prediction of what tariffs would do to the economy if just implemented over the last 6 months for the entire year, 1.5%.
Mm-hmm.
They believe, and that's the White House, and they wouldn't make it public. Normally they make their predictions public. They wouldn't make it public.
Right.
But it leaked out. And so I really think you have a president that isn't sure what he wants.
Well, I think that if you kind of put everything in one big pile and try and sort out the pieces from G7, and also, I guess, couple that with his history of where he has stood on tariffs, then couple that, too, with foreign nations paying their way when it comes to war. We have an agreement with a foreign nation. We go, and they're going to pay their way, and that goes back to the whole Angela Merkel situation when she first visited Trump in office and him handing her an invoice, which, again, has been a long-held belief of his, and that is that these other countries need to get in line. They need to pay their freight.
Yeah.
So the question is, all right, then how does that apply to economics? And has his positioning been all along? Has it been that, okay, either we all have equal tariffs, and the question is, all right, what do you consider to be equal, or no tariffs at all on any product? Is it all or nothing, essentially?
Well, because... But you just brought up something that I saw he was tweeting last night about they're not paying their fair share on NATO and relating that to trade. Well,
right.
They're two separate issues. If they're not doing their fair share on NATO,
right,
then pull our troops out of somewhere.
That's something we can do, and as commander-in-chief, he can make that decision.
But I thought that's where your head is. Is he trying to make the case that if you're not going to do what you do on NATO, we're going to tax the American consumer?
I think it is this. I think it is in all considerations, because there is trade considered when you go to war. There is the economics considered when you go to war. And there is the, okay, well, wait a minute, who's going to provide what and who's promising to do what? So I think those two streams do cross, to quote Ghostbusters. And I think that's, I don't know why I quoted Ghostbusters. The hell that has to do with
that's
anything.
As good as any other rhetoric we've heard in this whole discussion.
Is there a marshmallow tariff? I have no idea. But idea that there has to be that consideration if you want access to the world's greatest economy. It's, I don't doubt for a moment the president is genuine on that and believes that his approach will be the best way to get everybody in line. And only time, will tell. But the question is, what is it exactly that he's looking for? It is when we were saying over the last, I don't know, we've been saying it since he made the comment before the steelworkers, that he needs to make his case. I think he needs to be very clear about what he's doing and why he's doing it. But you take from that, okay, this is not a guy who always negotiates openly. Negotiations are about the details. They're about the splitting the hairs. They're about the minutiae. The open Twitter, rants and whatever it might be, that's about getting people to the table. If, again, this is about negotiation, if this is trying to get that better deal. But it's different when you're negotiating and you're the boss. He has a boss of 300. He has 320 million bosses right now. And so as a public servant, it becomes different because you've got to make that case, as we have said time and time again. He's got to make that case as to where he wants to go and what he's exactly what he's trying to accomplish. Because, you know, we thought the last caller was going to go to, you know, he, you know, wants everybody will want to bring their factories and manufacturing here because of cheap energy, which is good. But is that what the president actually does want?
I honestly don't know where his head is at right now with the statements as he's come out. You know, and you're talking about, you know, we're talking about policy. Putting America first is not policy when he tweets that. Right. That's not policy. That's a political statement. Now, when he puts out, as he did, that maybe we should have no tariffs with anyone in the G7, that's policy. That's the difference. And I've been making this statement here for the past couple of weeks because it gets frustrating. Everybody gives us the political argument. Mm-hmm. Well, he's doing best for what's best for the country. What's best for the country? Putting America first. Well, those are slogans. They're not policy.
That's the premise.
Right.
And we don't have any doubt that the president believes this is a good thing.
Well, we had a guy who was questioning our patriotism last week because of where we stand. No, our stands are based on doing what's best for American industry and America.
Yeah.
Everything right. that we believe is about putting America first.
Well,
how do you get there?
Right. Well, and that's the great thing about the discussions we've had on tariffs and trade. It's always about, for us, it's always about America first. And we believe that people who are pro-tariff believe it's about America first. So it's kind of a given. That's the commonality.
That's the given.
Common thread between both parties.
Yeah. Except for Bill Maher.
Yeah, well.
Bill Maher wants the economy to do bad.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't want the economy to do bad.
He's okay with people suffering.
Yes.
Well, we don't want that. We don't want that pain inflicted on industry and that pain inflicted on the consumer. We don't want that pain inflicted on any American. That is not the goal. The goal is to, again, expand the wealth, to go on further with what they have already created. If you look at what the Republicans did, what the president got done by leading the party, that was something that, I mean, getting the corporate rate down to 21%.
Nobody could have done it but Trump.
I don't think anyone.
Nobody.
I don't think it would have been light years.
You know why? Hmm. You think a Romney would have ever suggested that?
No. And Paul Ryan? No. And
Paul Ryan? I don't believe it. Ted Cruz would have.
No.
Said, let's get a 15%. I might be wrong. Ted might be listening. No, I would have. I don't know if you would have had the impact and the clout behind you to push it as hard as Trump did. Now, we said he's not going to get 15, but to get 22% was unbelievable, to the point where Nancy Pelosi has talked about the fact that if the Democrats take over, they're going to increase the corporate tax rate to 25%.
Right.
That means it's not 35. That shows you how incredible it is that once you lower it, even the Democrats can't raise it back to the original 35%.
Right.
They're only talking about a 25% increase, which then shows you the huge win. Nobody could have done that except Trump. Nobody.
Well,
we gave him credit for it, and it's wonderful that he was, well, except for the fact that you and I have to pay more.
Yeah, well, there's that. Stupid Republicans.
I forgot about that.
but this is also the, I think, a good effect of having it very out there, the discussion. This is, I guess, the frustration on the tariff situation.
Because we
know exactly.
But what you saw in the Sunday morning news shows from the administration was not policy; it was politics.
Right, and so
let's heat up the rhetoric.
We know, and we know exactly on taxes where the president stood. We want to know what the president believes in terms of trade and economics, and what he considers to be the better deal. What is your goal? I mean, the whole drill baby drill thing, the reason that became a thing back in 2008 is because we knew a very simple approach of going after our own oil on our own land and the federal government keeping us from doing that at the time and all of this. Things that are very clear, this is something that a number of people can get behind.
Well, but drill baby drill is political rhetoric and mm-hmm. policy at the same time.
Exactly, because you know, because it helped to, the political rhetoric helped to promote a very simple idea. Go after what is ours and stop this insane policy that the former administration had. That was a very clear thing. On this, what is it ultimately? Because I think the president, this president, probably better than most, can be that direct and be very clear. We just haven't had that clarity.
And this is an issue where I believe you need to have clarity on.
Yes.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
He's Eric Curley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. By the way, BuzzFeed is calling it fake news. Trudeau's eyebrow.
That
it was fake.
That his eyebrow was fake?
That it was fake. That's fake news. Said, however, the video clip from the same press conference confirms a fake eyebrow theory is, in fact, wrong. It shows that bad lighting was the culprit, giving Trudeau's left brow a weird shadow and making it appear as though it was separating from his face.
Oh, yeah. That could be, though.
Well, most guys, I don't know. Have you ever thought about your eyebrows? Somebody told me one time when I was taking a picture, they said, we need to darken your eyebrows because they're so light. Huh?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
No, my wife of nearly 30 years looked at me. I mean, this is
somebody
like a month
his
ago.
Eyebrows?
She goes, you know, your eyebrows are really light. I said, you know, we've been together for 3 decades, right? I said, I don't think about it.
Yes, it was a woman makeup artist when I was doing some commercial said, I need to darken your eyebrows. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Why? No.
Because they're very, very light.
Yeah. there are a lot of things about me that are light.
So
I don't need that.
I've never had fake eyebrows, but I had them darkened once.
Yeah.
For a TV commercial.
Yeah. I just don't put that much thought into it. I guess it's that I'm mostly wearing glasses. And my wife just, you know, she, and I said, why are you looking at me so weird? She goes, I just never noticed how light your eyebrows are. 30 years together, and
you notice that now?
That's
what you're looking at? Don't look at my gut.
Yeah, hey, better the eyebrows than my gut.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.